You've heard it said, it doesn't have to be fun to be fun. With that in mind, join us for an insider's glimpse into all things trekking, safaris, and world adventure. From packing for your Everest base camp trek, to what it felt like for a cancer patient to attempt to summit Kilimanjaro, or visiting a village in the Sacred Valley of Peru. You will be inspired, informed, and ignited to get out there and start adventuring. Welcome, welcome, welcome everybody to the Type 2 Fun podcast. My name is Mariah, and today we're going to be talking about Ecuador. And I have to be honest, I know nothing about this country, so I'm going to be learning right along with you. And it sounds like we have a really good ambassador to take us on this journey. We have JC, who is Embark Site Director for Ecuador. Hello, how are you?
Hi, Mariah. I'm very well, thank you.
I just felt like I needed to be honest, and I don't know much about this country, so I need you to take me to school, and I think your goal is to make me fall in love and jump on a plane immediately. Do you think we can do that?
Oh my God, yeah. That's I will do my best, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be an easy one because Ecuador has a lot to fall in love with.
I can't wait. So I guess take me back a little bit about the origin of the country. I want to know about the people. And really importantly, I need to know about food. I want to know about the food and the culture and all of the fun stuff.
Cool. Yeah. Well, Ecuador is a tiny little country, right? But is a mega diverse one. And I think the most important thing to start highlighting is the fact that you have a kind of a summary of everything you can find in South America in one small country, right? We have the Amazon rainforest, we have cloud forest on the foothills of the Andes, we have the high Andes and beautiful active volcanoes that we're going to be talking about in a bit. And then we have the lowlands, the Pacific coast, and the very famous Galapagos Islands. So you can imagine how much fun it is to travel around here, to experience all of these different natural areas and different ecosystems in a very easy fashion. And of course, when it's about culture, we have actually on our constitution, right? We recognize Ecuador as a multinational country, right? Because of all of these different indigenous groups that exist in the Amazon, in the Andes. And that's where it all started for us, right? We are ecotourism specialists. We are Embark's ground handler and outfitter, and I am Embark's site director. And we've been running trips for the last 20 years in this small but beautiful country. So I look forward to continue sharing a lot more about us.
I love it. So I guess tell me a little bit about, Ecuadorian culture. What means so much? If I were to guess, I would say it's family and food. Am I right? And land would be if I'm guessing correctly from what you just said.
Yeah, well, first of all, like in most of our continent, we're here in South America, we're a very religious country, right? So yeah, for sure, it's very Catholic, very family oriented. I live in the mountains. I live in the capital of the country, in Quito, where we also have that characteristics of living, in the Andes and in the mountains, meaning we spend a lot of time indoors, right? We like, not indoors in a sense of a family feeling. We spend a lot of time and we travel a lot within our families. Yeah, for sure.
And what can I expect to eat? Am I going to be eating crazy things, or is it going to feel like a little bit more of comfort of home?
Well, it really depends where we go, right? If we travel to the Amazon rainforest, like I did for many, many years, we can go really crazy and start, from monkey, alligators to ants, all sorts of little insects that, our friends and communities that we work with, they're used, but that's not the usual thing, right? In the Andes, I guess the most common, things is the stuff that grows up here, right? So you have a lot of potatoes, a lot of meat, especially pork. You have a lot of corn of different types and sizes, as well as potatoes, right? We have a myriad of different types of potatoes. And then when you travel to the lowlands, that is when it gets really diverse in terms of fruits. It's amazing the amount of different fruits. I guess one of the most beautiful things that we experience with friends and family and travelers that come to our country is to be able to show how exotic and diverse the fruit experience is. Actually, the thing that I enjoy the most, and probably that's where we would start with you, is to go into one of our markets to try and show you fruits that you probably have never seen, right? And that's actually one of the things that we love doing. And then down the coast, it's amazing, right? You have different types of ceviche, right? You have all of this fresh food coming from the ocean. You have, like I said, ceviches. But the other beautiful thing is that when you travel north to south on the Ecuadorian Pacific coast, the ingredients and the way those dishes are presented are very different, because in the northern of the Pacific coast, you have a lot of influence of the African cultures, right? The Afro-Ecuadorians. So it's a lot of coconut, a lot of, shrimp. And then when you travel down south, it's more around fish and ceviche, like I said. So yeah, it's pretty amazing, Mariah. I think you would really enjoy if you're a foodie, and I'm very lucky to have a professional chef in the family. It's definitely paradise.
Fish and fruit, you had me there. But I mean, come on, what does an ant taste like? And are they alive? Like, are they wiggling? I just need to know.
It's funny. It's we call them the lemon ants, and they taste like lemon.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. It's amazing.
But it's, they're alive. This isn't cooking.
They're alive. Yeah. They're alive, and they are these tiny little ants, and it's actually for kids a lot of fun, and it's completely it's really surprising for a lot of people.
Oh gosh, I don't know that I'm that brave. But I'm all over fruits and fish all day long. And I love ceviche style. You don't have to cook it. I mean, we could catch it and I'll immediately eat it. We're fine. and I love fruit. So tasting fruit I've never had before, that's great. We might, is there some beer or local liquor? That's how you're going to get me to have an ant or two. So if we have that, then maybe I'll try an ant.
We do have plenty of that. We have a lot of moonshine, and we're actually now, in one of our little experiments in a mountain lodge that we own and operate close to Cotopaxi, we are trying to do potato vodka with local ingredients. So that's going to be a good thing to add to your experiences here.
I'm ready. And see, it didn't take long. I'm far too easy to get me to sign up. I'm looking at the airline app right now. No, I'm just kidding. So that's really exciting. And tell me, I guess, a little bit too about the local language. Is it one universal language, or do we have many depending on region?
Well, the vast majority of Ecuadorians speak Spanish, right? That's the official language. But we have a large Quechua-speaking nation as well, which are, indigenous from the Andes and the Amazon. They speak Quechua. So that's also taught on the rural areas of Ecuador. That's also part of the curriculum for kids to study. And then when you go deep into the Amazon, you have all of these different groups of indigenous groups that they speak their own language. So that's pretty interesting to get to know. And actually one of them, called the Waurani people, their language is not related to any other in the world until now, which is, really, really fun and interesting. Until now, I speak very little Waurani. Wau Terero actually is the name of the language. But yeah, the majority of Ecuadorians will be speaking Spanish, but a lot of them speak English as well, which is also a great thing.
So you said the Amazon, and I'm just, the only thing I see in my head right now is a big snake. Am I going to see any snakes?
Well, you might, if you're lucky, right? One of the things that I like to talk up to say when is about wildlife, right? Because when you have the Galapagos Islands to compare with, you know, where is actually the wildlife is right there, and all of these animals are on your pathway, and you actually have to detour because they are not going to move because they don't see you as a threat. When you go to the Amazon, it's the other way around, right? You are pretty much seeing, you can feel how alive it is, but it's very rare for you to be able to see, especially big animals, right? But what I like to say is that they're all there watching you, right? And so you go to the Galapagos to see wildlife, and you go to the Amazon for the wildlife to see you.
Okay. I like that. So do they have binoculars, or I'm sure they're talking about us just like we talk about them. There might be some animal podcasts right now talking about humans visiting, maybe.
Yeah.
All right. So, I guess, you know, one of the biggest attractions from, I guess, definitely an adventure seeking hiking standpoint is Cotopaxi. I would love to hear from you, like, you know, what makes it so special, and, you know, a little bit about what we would see there. It is a national park, right? But it's also a mountain. So I'm sure that, brings, you know, interesting tourists and, you know, things to navigate for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Before going to Cotopaxi, I guess is the Andes Highlands, right? And the Andes of Ecuador, it's actually fractions of it are called the Avenue of the Volcanoes, right? Because we're talking about dozens of different volcanoes along this we call it avenue, right? But it's basically the Cordillera, right? The of the Andes. And Cotopaxi is definitely an emblematic volcano. It is, as you said, you know, is the highest active volcano in the world to start with, right? And it's also a national park, as you say, and is the second most visited national park in Ecuador. It's a very, you know, it's part of any postcard of Ecuador. It's very close to the capital, to Quito, right? So for a local quiteño like myself, you know, Cotopaxi is kind of like for you guys or in Europe, you know, when you have this icebreaker line of, oh, the weather is so nice today, or when it's winter, well, the weather is rubbish or whatever, right? In Quito, we would say, oh my God, did you see Cotopaxi showing up today? So it's kind of that line that you open to break the ice on any conversation, especially in Quito. So yeah, it's not only a beautiful and well-known volcano, but it's also part of our day-to-day here in where I live.
Active volcano. So should anybody be scared?
Well, no, it's you know, it's been dormant for almost 100 years, you know, in terms of eruptions process. In 2015, it did release some of its, you know, this huge energy, and we had this spectacle of you know, some ash being leaving, and we usually see on a very cold day there is wide open, you can see some vapor coming out of it, but no, it's completely, and it's probably the most monitored volcano in the world as well, right? So a lot of volcanologists studied it from all over the world. They come, so I think we are in on a good side in terms of anticipation of any event with the volcano.
Is that something that you just said the word energy, and for some reason I wanted to touch on that a bit. Do you feel any energy coming from it, even when it's, you know, nothing is happening from it? Like, I think it just, you know, I live in North Carolina. There's nothing like that near me, so I wouldn't even know what it's like to live so close to, you know, this great piece of, you know, earth. Do you notice that? Is that, or is it just like how I look at, you know, the dog park down the street? I'm like, oh, well, it's there. It's no big deal. I don't even think about it.
Right. No, it's actually very peaceful. You know, one of the things that I love the most about that valley, because, you know, when I have a small property in that valley, and we are surrounded by volcanoes, right? And Cotopaxi is the star of the show, but there are other volcanoes around it. And I guess the thing that you experience the most is peace, right? It's so peaceful to see it, to admire it. It's actually an incredible place to feel like the world has stopped and you can just admire what is around you. So I think that's the type of energy you'll be getting from it.
I love that, because I think if I were to tell anybody, hey, I'm going to go, you know, climb and hike around Cotopaxi and, you know, it's an, you know, active but dormant volcano, people would freak out immediately. But it's almost like it sounds like it has the complete opposite effect when it's just this really calming nature. That juxtaposition, I bet, is probably really interesting and would be a lasting impression, I guess, on, you know, I'm just going to like say Americans for lack of better terms, but, you know, somebody who doesn't live around something so majestic.
Yeah. Well, it is pretty majestic, as you say, and it attracts you. You know, it's just because we're talking about a perfect cone-shaped volcano, right? Apart from all of the other attributes it has, it is just a stunning, perfect mountain to be seen.
Yeah, I love that. I say the same thing about, I'm a skydiver, and everybody freaks out. They're like, "Why do you jump from a plane? It's so scary." And I tell people it's because it's the most peaceful thing I've ever experienced in my life. And so it sounds like this area would be the same. You know, what your mind would tell you is one thing that would keep you from such a beautiful place is the reason why you should go, because it's the complete opposite, which I love that.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, how you say, you know, I one of the things that I don't do is jump from planes, but I definitely have been... I like to say maturing, you know, and I started off 20 years ago working in the Amazon rainforest, you know, camping with indigenous communities in remote areas and having these wild experiences, pulling dugout canoes for days and camping on banks of rivers. And from there, I did a bunch of trips and adventures in the Galapagos Islands, right? Where you're snorkeling and surfing and diving and spending a lot of time, you know, underwater, but, you know, on that marine environment. And in this last stretch of my, you know, of my life is that I've been, you know, really connected to the mountains and the feel. It's so different, right? It's so like we're talking, right? It's the sense of admiring something majestic, is being able to feel like you're so tiny around this incredible mountains, and it's just the way and the pace and the vibe. It's completely different from these other places that I've been, you know, traveling in all of my life, right? It's so different, and I'm really enjoying this time where I'm spending a lot of time walking and climbing these mountains.
I love that. So yeah, that is definitely what makes it so special. It just sounds like it just draws you in. And that's my favorite thing about traveling in general, is what you said about it just makes you feel a little bit small, you know, because this world is so, there's so much beautiful things to see. I love that. So you did mention that there are many, many mountains in and around the Cotopaxi National Park. And, you know, Embark uses them for acclimatization purposes. So yeah. I'd love to hear about, what are a few that you've climbed and, or that whole experience on, okay, I'm going to climb Cotopaxi or be a part of it, but I'm also going to be a part of all these other, you know, mountains within the range.
Yeah, well, I guess the keyword there, like you said, is acclimatization, right? When, you know, I live in Quito and at a 2,400 meters altitude, right? And that's already pretty high compared to the standard in the US especially, right? So for anyone coming from sea level, the most important thing to start enjoying the Andes, even if it's walking around Quito, right, the city, you have to take it easy for a few days, right? So if you are aiming to climb Cotopaxi, you definitely have to spend some time in high altitude. And the process is really hike up and down, right? And that's convenient to have other surrounding lower mountains to try it. So going back to your question, it's, you know, on this valley, you have Paso Choa, which is this beautiful mountain to climb at 4,200 meters. And we might have to do some calculation here to transform them into feet for you.
Even that, I'm terrible with math. So I'm sure whoever's listening is much better than I am. Math and directions is lost right. on me. So we don't need to talk specifically to me.
Right. We'll give the listeners then some homework to do some calculation. Okay. Right. But so you have Paso Choa that is right in front of Cotopaxi. That is one of the mountains that we use actually in the city of Quito. And there is a funny quote from the great explorer Alexander von Humboldt, you probably have heard of. And he has a few remarks about Ecuadorians. And one of them is that he says that Ecuadorians are very strange people, right? Because we live happily and calmly on surrounded by active volcanoes, right? Which is, like you said before, you know, it's pretty strange to hear that. But there is mm-hmm. a very nice mountain right in the middle of the city called Pichincha. So that's going to be another mountain that we'll be climbing, probably the first one to start our climatization. And then we have
Say that name again.
Pichincha.
Pichincha. That's so Pichincha. Fun.
Yeah.
Does it mean anything?
Well, it's actually the name of the province of where I live, right? So and you have other, you know, interesting names for you. You know, you have Cayambe, that is north of Quito, which is, you know, a snow-capped volcano as well. You have Antisana, you have Ilinisas, you have Corazon. The translation is heart.
Ooh, heart. I know that one.
Yeah, and you have, going back closer to Cotopaxi, and one that my wife and I really love to walk is called Rumiñahui. That is named after an Inca general that fought against the Spanish during their encounters down here. So you have all of these beautiful names and little mountains.
We climb all of those for acclimatization or no?
Well, not necessarily, right? It really depends on all of them are incredible to try them, but I guess with a you know, from 3 to 4, you know, we spend a good week before climbing a Cotopaxi training, right? And we're going to do the lower mountains first. And then on the previous day, you're going to be doing what we call a glacier school, right? Which is, you can go to the glaciers of Cotopaxi to try your equipment, you know, to try your crampons and all of the gear that you're going to be used in doing your overnight climb.
Wow.
And then you go for the summit, right? You're going to rest on the following day, and then you're going to push on a midnight hike up all the way to the summit.
Wow. And one thing that I've just been dying to ask you a little bit. So I did climb Mount Kilimanjaro with Embark, and I looked it up, and Cotopaxi is 6 feet taller than Kilimanjaro. But right. You only climb it in a day. Now, I did not climb Kilimanjaro in a day, so I have to know how does this work? What is the difference in, I guess, those two?
Yeah. No, it's a good question. It's, well, like I said before, right? We Cotopaxi, so is more or less 6,000 meters, right? But the advantage at all only from the capital, you're already 2,800. High already, right? I bet at Kilimanjaro you start from sea level all the way up, so that's a big difference, right? Mm-hmm. And the funny thing, and that's I guess one of the characteristics of Ecuador and how easy it is to get to places. You can drive. There is a parking lot in the mountain Cotopaxi that you can drive, and you are at 4,000 meters already, right? And you have a refuge at 5,000 meters. So in a way, the overnight climb is 1,000 meters. You go from 5,000 all the way to 6,000. So it's very convenient, right? It's a very easy, and that's in general Ecuador. It's very easy to get to places, right? And you can drive halfway through mountains that you want to climb, which is amazing. I can go from my house tonight and camp in the volcano, or spend the night in the refuge and climb it today at midnight. So that's how easy it is compared to other huge expeditions to well-known mountains around the world.
I thought you were going to tell me it had like an escalator or something. Because well, then I would be all in that. That seems really. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, trust me. That those 1,000 meters and those 6 hours up are tough, right?
They're tough.
Proper climbing, you know, proper climbing. But it's a cool climb because it's not really technical. It's actually, you know, a climb up. You know, you do have stretches where you can you have to wear your crampons. You're hiking and climbing on ice and snow, depending mm-hmm. on the day of the season. But it's a non-technical one, which is make it very accessible for a lot of people.
So if I'm wearing true crampons and there's lots of snow and ice, are we all attached as a group, or is it, you know, free hiking?
We do. Well, it depends on how professional you are, right? But in general, on a Embark expeditions, we're going to be using a ratio of one guide every two clients. And we definitely have ropes, right? So you have a guide rope to two of our clients, and then which is a standard for us, and that will be the safe way to go.
I'm not professional at all. It's the least professional possible when hiking. So I would need extra, you know, attention for sure. Sometimes I don't even wear the proper shoes. So,
we'll make sure to give you all of the gear that you need here. And, you know, I can tell you that my last climb was a beautiful one, and I did it with my wife, who is not a climber and not really into mountains at all, you know, and she never thought about that. And at some point we said, well, you know, let's do something different, the two of us. So we went through the process of climbing a few mountains, you know, getting her accustomed to, you know, to going up and down from these places. And then, you know, without proper, you know, she's not at all, you know, an explorer or an adventurer, and not, you know, used to this kind of gear. And she climbed up to Cotopaxi with a huge smile, which is, you know, something beautiful to experience together.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. Okay. And you said we start in a parking lot. So, I mean, that sounds like something I would experience here. Like I drive to it, I park. So, I feel like I need you to paint to me like what my whole experience would be. Like I would start with my friends or my hiking buddies in a parking lot. And then what would the process be? Do I sleep in tents? Is it every day a climb? Is there some hike up, sleep down? Like I kind of like paint me my whole experience.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's a very easy one, right? Because we feel like adventure nowadays can be very comfortable. So we don't really need to be camping here and there. We actually have a lot of beautiful lodges in the surrounding area, and that we can use as base camp to go on these day trip expeditions to try these different mountains around Cotopaxi, right? On the climbing day, you definitely sleep in the mountain, right? So, and that's actually the fun part to describe, right? You're gonna drive as you said on the previous day, or the previous afternoon. You're gonna drive to the parking lot. You're gonna walk up to the refuge at 5,000 meters, and then you have a little hut called it is a refugio. Built by the same, you know, Ecuadorian climbers who love and live out of the mountain. And you're going to try and sleep there until midnight, right? So you're going to have a light dinner very early, and you're going to be sleeping on some bunk beds with other fellow climbers. And at around 12, you know, or 1 a.m., you gear up. And you start your walk up. So you hike up during the night. And there is one specific reason why you do that, because the sun, we're very high, right? And we're in the Andes, so the sunshine it comes directly. We're also in the equator, right? So it's very strong sunshine during the day. So you want to climb up when there's snow, it's really cold and firm. and then you're walking up, and by sunrise, you would be arriving at the summit, which is, you know, a magical moment to experience, you know, seeing, you know, the Ecuador and the volcanoes were waking up and seeing all around you, all of the different volcanoes that exist in this avenue of the volcanoes, like I told you. So that's kind of more or less the experience, right? So you have a 6 hours walk up. More or less after 1 hour, 30 minutes, you're still hiking on you're not really hiking on ice. So after 1 hour and a half to 2 hours, you gear up and then you rope and you put your crampons and you start walking on the snow and the ice until you get to the summit. And then they walk up. It's always quicker, right? But it's still, you know, it's still 3 good hours to get back to your to the refuge. So you're talking about more or less 9 hours of activity.
That's nothing. I can do that.
Yeah, no, it's like I said, it's very, very accessible.
It sounds like it. And is it snow all the time, or am I like scrambling over rocks, or, you know, like, there was one section in Peru where we were quite literally like on our hands and knees going over rocks. Are there some like other of those aspects, or is it just like a paved long walk?
It is pretty much ice and snow all the way up.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
There are times of the year when it's a lot more icy than snow, which is hard. You know, one of my climbs were pretty much all on ice once upon a time. And there was a hard day, you know, mm-hmm. But in general, it's, you know, it's always with this beautiful snow, making it very nice and easy to walk up.
So can you climb it year round? I know that certain places, you know, that are high touristy for climbing, there's like a climbing season. Is there a climbing season there, or can I go there anytime?
We do have climbing seasons, right? We do have, and especially end of the year. Where we call it little summer. You're in between, you know, winter from cold weather, and then you have kind of an opening where you still have the cooler weather, but, you know, nicer conditions to climb up. So that's very, very busy during the end of the year. But Ecuador in general, Mariah, is a year-round destination, right?
Oh,
as
nice.
Well as it's climbing. So it's very gentle and pretty year-round, right? We don't even have the seasons, right? I'm pretty sure you know, or if not, we only know summer and winter, right? And our summer is dry and windy, and our winter it's rainy, and that's pretty much is the case for someone like me who lives in Quito, and it's probably the reason why I love living in this city. But going back to Cotopaxi, you know, it's a mountain that is climbed year round. Right now, and I was just very close to it at our lodge during this weekend, and I have a group of friends climbing it, and they had a hard time, right? Because summertime, it's very windy, so they were caught on a little storm there with a lot of wind. So, you know, they still made it, but I guess it wasn't as pleasant as it can be in other times of the year.
Hey, the name of this podcast is called Type 2 Fun. So not as pleasant is what we like, because Type 1 fun, anybody can do that. You're just having fun. Everything's fine. But, you know, Type 2 is when in the middle of it, you're like, man, this stinks. But then afterwards, you're like, that was so cool. And it's the story you tell at parties. So honestly, yeah. I would love to hear like one or two of your stories where, yeah, like you got stuck somewhere, or, you know, freak blizzard. Like I think hikers in general, but especially like adventurous, we kind of live for when things don't go as planned, especially knowing that with somebody like Embark, I know I'm safe the whole time. No matter what happens, I have people who are local to the ground who are going to be helping me, you know, through this. But then I get this really awesome story out of it, you know, that I get to tell to impress people back home.
All right. You want to hear one? This is a special one.
Heck yeah. I want to hear it all.
All right. So so I wasn't ready to, you know, I wasn't thinking about climbing Cotopaxi at all. You know, once, you know, this is like 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine came from Colorado and she really wanted to climb it. And I said, listen, I'm going to do a few mountains with you beforehand, you know, just, you know, for the pleasure of walking around and catching up. Mm-hmm. And then you do your summit and that's fine. So we did a few mountains and, you know, and I was feeling, you know, very strong and ready to climb. And I ended up, you know, feeling that it was a good moment to do it. So I came back home, you know, that was the previous night she was going to climb, came back home to grab my gear and told my wife, listen, you know, I'm feeling strong. I'm going to go for Cotopaxi. And she was like, what? Are you crazy? You know, people prepare for months and you just go for a couple of days walk and you feel like you're ready to climb this big mountain. I said, listen, I just feel like it's a good moment to do it. And she was like, well, so you better take your grandparents with you. And I was like, take my grandparents with you? What are you talking about? And she was like, yeah, take your grandparents with you. And I'm like, well, I don't understand what you're trying to tell me. And then she wrote, listen, man, remember your parents, you know, my grandmother passed away kind of a year before. And I wasn't in Ecuador at the time when they did a ceremony for her where she was cremated. And my grandfather, who died many, many years ago, they were put together and going back to the family, right? The whole Ecuadorian family went to Cotopaxi because all of my uncles are climbers as well. And they did a little ceremony. But I wasn't there, so my wife, I told my mother to save me some of the ashes because I wanted to do my own personal ceremony for her because I promised my grandmother before she died that I was going to take her to the summit of Cotopaxi, right?
Okay.
So my wife remembers me that I said, oh my God, yes. So we went and find the little box where the ashes were and I put it on the backpack and left, right? So we were climbing. And it was a hard day, right? It was very dry, so a lot of ice. So you know, I felt very tired. And we were right at sunrise. We're still an hour away from the summit, and I was feeling like without the energy to go up. And my friend was in the same situation. So we're both like, maybe we should go down. And then we're sitting there watching the sunrise and the beautiful views. And I was like, hold on, we cannot go down. And she was like, why? Well, I brought my grandparents with me. And she was like, what? So I tell the story to her and the guide and everybody got very emotional and you know, people started crying. It's like, no, we have to go. We have to go for it. And so we decided to go up, right? And that was, you know, the big... the energy that we needed to make that final stretch and make it to the summit. So what about that as a special story? I don't know if you want to hear part two, the day that I ate my grandparents.
Oh, no. Yes. Keep going. This is great. This is great.
All right. So I got to the summit, right? And I said, listen, guys, you know, give me a few minutes. I'm going to go there and you know, think about a few words and, you know, pay my respects and just release the ashes. So it wasn't windy. So it was this beautiful view and I was, you know, doing my thing. And then suddenly I opened the box and I said, well, okay, here we go. So I threw everything and suddenly there was this wind that came by. So all of the wind came back to me. So suddenly I was covered with my grandparents' ashes, and I probably ate half of them. So that was it. So that's part two, and that's kind of the end of the story. But that was it.
Oh, no.
That was a, you know, that's the funny part of a very emotional moment that I had there in the mountain. So it became, you know, very special to me at that specific spot, and that the amount going back to peace and energy, Mariah. Well, there you go. Right, that was a moment where I felt so in peace with myself and my people that I really love, and a moment of, you know, a lot of energy, right? That I feel like, okay, we have to do it for them. And that was really, really beautiful.
I love that story. I think sometimes though, you always need, I call it your one thing. It's the one thing in your mind that keeps you going when your you know, mind tells you to stop, because your body can not most of the time keep going further than your mind can. So you have to practice this, you know, one thing that's going to keep you going. And it sounded like you had your one thing with you and maybe had it a bit more in you and on you than you wanted to. But what a special, special moment. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. That was a special day. And every climb is a different climb, right? And every climb has a different situation and story. But that one I will never forget for sure.
I love it. Well, I would love to hear, you know, anything that you want us to know special about this area that we didn't cover before we kind of wrap things up. Because I'm sure, you know, we've not even touched the surface of what we can experience there of all of the treks and all of the, you know, climatization hikes and everything. So I would love to hear, is there anything special that you want everybody who's listening to hear and know about your special place in the world?
Sure. Yeah. No, thank you for this, Maria. And thank you for the opportunity to share a little bit about our country and the beautiful Andes and volcanoes and mountains we have. And I guess, you know, this moment is so special for all of us, right? We've been living this very complex period where we were forced to stay at home and not travel and, you know, not being able to do the adventures that we love so much and discover new places and things. And I guess in Ecuador, at least, we've been celebrating the opportunity to share, you know, all of these beautiful open spaces that allow for people to disconnect, right? We've been so connected during this period of time to the technology that in a way saved us, right? To remain connected and working. But at the other time, in the other hand, we've been so involved with our gadgets and technological gear. And I think that this area of the world that I live and love so much is a place that allows for you to really disconnect and in a way reconnect, right? Reconnect with yourself, with your friends, with your beloved ones. Is a place where you really have an opportunity to remember how beautiful it is to explore, right? And have adventures. And is a great place to resume that and continue going to other beautiful places and mountains around the world.
I love it. Well, you've definitely done your part. I can't wait to go. So I was an easy sell though, if I'm being honest, because I love to travel, like you said, and explore. So I'm in. Like let's do this. But I hate the snow, so I'm gonna have to you know build up to that. If it's an entire day of snow, I'm gonna have to build up to that. Lots of layers, I feel like, right?
Lots of layers, but I mean, if you put that into context, it's gonna be, you know, a few hours with snow, but many, many days with sunshine and beautiful landscapes and green pastures to hike and explore. And then you have that one push to get your grand prize, which is, you know, getting to the summit of the highest active volcano in the world and probably one of the most beautiful ones as well.
That's beautiful. You sold. I'm done. I can definitely trade a few hours of snow for days and days of sunshine. That's fine.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Remember, it doesn't have to be fun to be fun. Thank you again for joining us on the Type 2 Fun podcast. We will see you again on the next adventure. But in the meantime, check us out at www.embarkexplorationco.com.